podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are continuing our opponent previews coming into the season, racing to try to get them all done before the season starts. A little bit behind, but we are getting caught up. To help me talk about the next opponent on our list here, the Oklahoma Sooners, I have Peyton Guthrie of the Keyhole Pod joining me today. Peyton, how you doing?
Doing well, man. Having a hot summer down here. I know tomorrow it's supposed to be 110 and then 112 on Sunday. So southeast Oklahoma is starting to boil a little bit. But other than that, we're staying inside, just trying to keep alive.
Just a little bit? I mean, it feels like that's boiling quite a bit. So. Yeah. You know, meanwhile, contrast that with us up here in Kansas, where, you know, I think today's high was like 80 or something like that. So I will take our weather any day over the weather that you have. So I lived in Florida for a while, though. So like the humidity going with that heat is just as awful. So, all right. So let's go ahead. First time you're coming on our show, and I really appreciate it. I've been over on your guys' show a few times to kind of talk about the Jayhawks, but Oklahoma, this is a team that, honestly, this is probably one of the years where I know the least about them than I normally do. Normally, I have a good sense, right? They're a very strong team that has a lot of talent, and I know last year you kind of, you know, I think most people going into the year last year saw that there was the potential for some problems with, you know, so much stuff being new and Lincoln Riley leaving. But I think most people, myself included, kind of just thought, like, they could take a step back, but they're not going to take a huge step back. Like, they're still Oklahoma. They still have five-star talent, like, all over the place. But obviously last year was kind of a shell shock, I think, for a lot of people, both in and outside of the fandom there. What's the feeling around Oklahoma fans and those that are, you know, around the Oklahoma program? How big of a deal was last year, and how ready do they think they are to bounce back this year?
I mean, well, last year was just a massive deal, and there's a lot of people around the program, a lot of reporters and beat people, and, you know, myself and, you know, through the keyhole ourselves, we all basically chose to look at it from the good side of it, of saying, like what you were saying, OU's talented, they recruit well, everything's going to kind of work out. Sure, there's probably some bumps, but they should be able to cruise by talent alone. And then you saw the first losing season in an Oklahoma football program in 20-something years. That's an issue, seven losses. And then it comes out through a FOIA request that Brent in his contract had a win bonus of get to seven wins. Now, usually if you're expecting like big time college football, seven wins should just be like a no matter what type of a thing. But to know that's where Brent had his like big time win bonus for the regular season last year was just to get to seven. That does seem to be an issue. And maybe it's something him and the administration and the rest of the program kind of understood a little bit more. I think where we all got caught up on is that Brent is very positive when he speaks. He speaks with a lot of energy and like moves forward, and he can say things that are negative, but you don't hear them that way. Because I believe last year, Big 12 Media Days, he talked about tearing it down to the studs, and everyone was kind of thinking, oh, he must mean schematically and so on and so forth. But what it really meant was, no, he's tearing the program down to the studs, and you can tell how that worked out for OU moving forward during that season. Now, again, OU had seven losses. Five of those were by a single possession. You know, you flip around a couple of plays. Lebby learns how to run the football or not take, you know, a three and out in 8 seconds. OU probably wins two, maybe even three more games because, you know, Tech runs out of time. West Virginia runs out of time. It's something of that nature. They didn't play really complementary football. But that said, I still think 6-7 is probably an accurate reflection of what the team was, because it doesn't matter if you're a team like Oklahoma that you won by the skin of your teeth nine times. Oklahoma is a top-tier blue blood college football program. It should be winning football games and dominating them in a much, much higher level than they were, even under Lincoln Riley. I mean, we talk about him scoring 40, 50, 60 points a game, but he would still win, you know, 60 to 55. You know, it's like, oh, he wasn't quite putting something down that says we are Oklahoma. Brent is trying to change that with the change in the philosophy when it comes to recruiting. Along the defensive line, defensive backfield, just kind of get larger across the board. But we're hoping that is going to start showing dividends My assumption is, though, is that that dividends will start showing in 2024 in the first year in the SEC. I just don't know if this team is ready. This current Big 12 media day, I believe Brent said there's like 65 to 67 players of the 85. That's their either their first or second year in the program. So it's a very young or maybe new team still. Once you start adding in transfers, maybe not be young all the way, but still a lot of people who need to be caught up and sped up into that, to the program, into these schemes and systems they have to kind of play around. And then you kind of have to hope, as OU fans do, that Brent and Lebby have kind of learned their lessons being a rookie head coach and a rookie full-time play caller. Like, Lebby was someone who installed systems at his old places, and he didn't call the plays every single, you know, down to down. He's doing Oklahoma. He's the head coach of offense at Oklahoma, so he had a lot of learning stuff last year. And so you're hoping they took their bumps and bruises last year, and now they've changed, and this is now going to be, as a floor, if you look at the schedule, you know, an 8-9-10 win team, just potentially based on the talent they have. That said, this is why you play the football games. A couple of dudes get hurt. OU's not all the way deep yet. Things can happen. So, I mean, that's kind of like putting as much of a bow on last year and kind of where we are currently that I can put on it. It's just that the team was a lot thinner than we thought, and the difference makers just weren't there like they had been in the past for the University of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I think going into last year, a lot of people had taken for granted just how much Oklahoma's, you know, advantage over to other teams was their depth and their high-quality depth. And they didn't have that last year. You know, Dylan Gabriel goes down at the quarterback position. You don't really have a backup that you can count on to win you a game. You know, obviously it was great that he came back, and I wish he hadn't come back so quickly and played against the Jayhawks. But, you know, they have still upper-level talent, like front-line starting talent the same. But, yeah, there's a lot of questions about, you know, how are they doing things differently. The defense has been an issue for a really long time at Oklahoma, like a lot longer than I thought it ever would have been. You know, so much so that defense was a meme at Oklahoma, like for a long, like for quite a while when Lincoln Riley was there, that, you know, like that was the thing, right? Like, we know that their offense is going to be good. He's the quarterback whisperer, but are they going to be able to field a defense? It wasn't quite to the level of, you know, Texas Tech defenses with Patrick Mahomes, but it was still pretty bad. So the fact that I thought they took a step forward defensively last year, even just incrementally, and the question is going to be, how big of a step can they take this year? How much more can they improve that? And will that allow them to kind of take this step forward? I still have questions about this offense, though. Like, is it going to be able to be consistent? They definitely had some streaky, you know, times back and forth, all kind of all over the place. And so, you know, let's go ahead and dive in. Because like you said, like last year, it feels like it was an aberration to some extent. But I also don't know that we learned enough about Brent Venables and his staff and what they're trying to do to say for certainty that it's all going to bounce back this year. So looking at the offense, what do you expect this offense to look like this year? Obviously, Venables is not known for his offense because he's a defensive guy, a defensive coordinator. But with Dylan Gabriel coming back, like, what is the expectation? Who are you expecting to be the big contributors for this offense?
Well, the great thing for Brent Venables is that he gets to take the test the second time, because the questions that this team has is basically the exact same questions last year had. Who's on the defensive line? Who are your difference makers at wide receiver? Who do you have playing in the backfield? Those are the exact same questions OU has today as they walk into the season that starts in 15 days for Oklahoma, I believe. Like, that's where we are, and he gets to take those exact same questions again. But this time he has different personnel, different people, and experience to potentially, you know, kind of hopefully ace the questions. But just talking specifically about the offense, yes, Dylan Gabriel is back. He's hopefully will be the steady hand in the offense. I personally do not believe him to be a program difference maker or a team difference maker. He just needs to be the point guard of the offense to sort of job. His job is to get the ball out to, you know, physical athletic freaks and allow them to do things. He himself is not Caleb Williams, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, you know, that type of thing. I need to get the ball out to the guys that go there. His biggest issue is his deep ball. I mean, Lebby wants to score from afar. Like that's the whole gimmick is score far. You know, they kind of fancy themselves as like the Golden State Warriors, where it's like, I'm shooting threes. If I make 40% of them, we win. Congratulations. You know, it doesn't matter what you've done. Now the issue with the Golden State Warriors is they had two of the greatest shooters of all time. Then they had, Draymond Green there, you being the backbone of the defense. So they have obviously players. It's not just schematic. As we saw last year, FOU had a great scheme, according to SP Plus, a top 10 offense, even while being extremely streaky, and is projected to be a top 10 offense again. This is OU fans are used to being number one offense. So that even just dropping from 1 to 10, it's just a massive, massive drop within ratings, maybe not necessarily within rankings. But Dylan Gabriel is going to be your steady hand. I do not expect him to be like a game breaker type of thing. It's probably something like 3 touchdowns, a pick, 250 yards, you know, type of a thing. That's the sort of game he should be producing for OU. I don't expect him to be throwing for 500 yards or 300 plus yards. It's going to be, maybe like a Sam Bradford off game. That's what Dylan Gabriel should be producing every single game at that point in time. The thing that may change for him, though, in Lebby with Dylan Gabriel is that this year you have Jackson Arnold. You have a 5-star freshman prospect who, according to what I've seen and heard, so I've also seen it with my own eyes on the computer screen, is a physical phenomenon. He's very strong, very good, knows how to throw the football, has played in this style of offense throughout his entire high school. This is a complete step into it. That said, obviously, the types of players he's playing with and against is different. I mentioned Jackson Arnold, not in that he should be pushing Dylan Gabriel for a starting job or anything, but it does allow Lebby to say, now we can start running the quarterback more. That is a big part of the Lebby Bear Raid offense, is having that QB run game and playing true 11-on-11 football instead of 10-on-11, allowing the defense to have one plus one on you. This allows you to play 1-on-1. Again, I guess another basketball kind of analogy there, allows him to have more running lanes. Last year, after he got hurt, they basically shuttered that. Like, it was not going to happen. Once he came back, he was very rarely running. Those were mainly scrambles at that point in time. The running game wasn't as much. I would expect him to get 5 to 7 carries a game at this point in time out of zone reads or like called power plays or something of that nature. That being said, the strength of this OU team is going to be its offensive line and its two running backs, Javonte Barnes and Gavin Salchuk. Those are the two strongest guys on the team. Those are 1A, 1B types of running backs. Barnes is your power back. Gavin Salchuk, if you watch the Florida State Bowl game, is your slasher and dude who can score. I won't know if it's quite thunder lightning because I don't think Barnes is like a big rumble tumble guy, but he seeks contact and he tries to really, really put a damage on people. And I think the game plan for Lebby is going to be to wear down defenses with this run game. My hope is that if OU has 10 offensive possessions, 8 of them are running plays with psych wide receiver screens and some stuff like that kind of added in there, and maybe like 2 true passing plays. I mean, if OU is getting away with it, they're not going to have to pass very often. They're going to be able to kind of steamroll some stuff across the board for that manner. Your auxiliary players, like the tight end H-back position, which is extremely helpful under Lincoln Riley, you know, Demetri Flowers, things of that nature, being able to get open and pop passes and in the flats, those are kind of non-existent in this Bear Raid, but they do have Austin Stogner coming back. You know, Braden Willis last year played a lot of the Wildcat quarterback and also had a great year for OU moving forward in blocking. They have Austin Stogner coming back, transferring back from South Carolina, which doesn't truly happen too often when you transfer away from a school and then come back to that same school. But he has had health injuries himself, risk himself throughout the years of being nicked up and everything. If he can't play every single game, that position basically doesn't exist. They might as well roll out a 6th offensive lineman at that point in time. So, and Stogner himself is more of a pass catching guy. So it'll be interesting to see how Lebby uses Stogner. I don't expect him to have a big year. I expect him maybe have like 15, 20 catches on the year. True blanket type of a guy, maybe something schemed up. But I don't know if there's going to be something there kind of regardless. And then the position group that maybe the hardest part for OU moving forward, because anyone can say run game. Like, hey, if the offensive line gels, you hand the ball off, you get it taken care of.
Yeah.
But for the beret to really work, you have to take the top off for that stuff to kind of work. And OU doesn't have anyone who really strikes fear into opposing, you know, defenses at this point in time. You would say Jahlil Farouk and Drake Stoops. And Farouk is fast, but they keep saying he's a Percy Harvin type player. I do not believe he's that type of player, but he may be used in that type of role, which means he'll be lining up in the backfield. He'll be lining up in that H-back spot, slot, taking jet sweeps, taking tunnel screens, like the idea of we're getting him the ball as quickly as possible and then allowing him to be a runner as fast as we can. If that's true, and then you have Drake Stoops as your intermediate guy, your 5 to 8 yard pass guy, and same thing for Stogner probably, it's like a BB gun offense. You don't have the howitzer back there. You don't have someone who's taking the top off. So they're hoping Anthony, a transfer from Michigan coming into to OU, who had one great game against Michigan State and then basically never played after that, he can be an experience coming in to take the top off. He is very fast. He has a body type to it. But for this to really work, what OU needs is a Jazzwe Pettoe, who is a 4-star wide receiver out of the Waco, Texas area. Please, no one persecute me if I'm wrong there. Freshman who's just a blazer, extremely fast. Same thing for Gavin Freeman and Brennan Thompson. Brennan Thompson, who played for Texas last year, is transferring over, who was on the Texas track team, who produces Olympic track stars. So you're hoping those guys can be the fast guys who take the top off, but you're expecting on a former walk-on, a true freshman, and a sophomore who had like 4 catches for Texas to play major downs and try to be someone who's a difference maker. A hidden name would be Nick Anderson, who is the younger brother of Rodney Anderson. Great athletic genes there, but he shares the same genes, as in he just cannot stay healthy. He's healthy currently. He's got the body type. He's got the physical prowess to be able to make differences, but it's just kind of a bunch of names. There's no one who's truly proven at this point in time to kind of move forward. And I guess the lastly is on the offensive line. I really have zero issues here. It sounds weird because OU loses both tackles to the NFL, but you got Walter Rouse, transfer coming in. You have Tyler Guyton, who's going to handle stuff. And in the middle of the offensive line should be pretty strong. The only thing I have maybe an issue with is the center, Andrew Rame, who's had some iffy kind of camp. There's been some, you know, talking of other people taking first team snaps and stuff, so that one might be something to keep an eye on. But if you're going to put some money on a position coach at the University of Oklahoma right now, doing that with Bill Beedenbaugh would be a smart thing to do, that he'll get it figured out with his 5. But when it comes to the offense, I guess to sum that up, I went really long, is
fine.
The offensive line will probably be good. They got 2 really good running backs, and then who knows after that? So
yeah, well,
it should be a very heavy
and that
rushing game.
Jives with my, you know, high level evaluation. I try to, you know, read up on as much of these teams as I can before I jump in, so that I can contribute to the conversation. And like, you know, offensive line, Oklahoma never has an issue with the offensive line. They've had great offensive lines for a really long time. Like, you might be able to say that they haven't had an elite one every year, but they generally have a way above average one. And when you have 20 guys in the offensive line room, I'm pretty sure if you've got a line coach who's worth anything, he can find 5 guys that are going to be able to play well. So, I'm not worried about the offensive.
The issue for OU.
Good.
The issue for OU on offensive line the last few years, and I'm going to use a term coined by a Red Dirt Sport. If you guys really want to follow a good Twitter handle for OU football, Red Dirt Sports is the best one. The offensive line has been basically furniture movers for the last 5 years. You know, this isn't the same line that Kyler Murray was behind of Cody Ford and who's the guy who's on the Ravens now? Orlando. I cannot believe I'm blanking out on this. But those are the guys who draw a couple personal foul penalties a game. Like, they just beat the hell out of people.
Orlando
they were
Brown,
rough
by the
there.
Way.
Orlando Brown Jr., yes.
Yeah.
Very,
he was
very
the
rough,
chief, which is why I remember.
Brutal.
So.
So the dogs are going crazy. Got home. But they don't have that type of player. They've got people who can move people schematically, but maybe they're not necessarily punching the defensive end's neck as they're on the ground. So that's just kind of the difference there.
Yeah, so you talk about how in order for this offense to be really successful, they need to have that deep threat. I mean, it almost seems though like it's a double whammy of, uncertainty there, because you have a quarterback who has known issues with going downfield. Like, I think everybody at this point knows he had some issues going downfield when he was at UCF. He had some issues last year going downfield, especially with any kind of accuracy. You know, but then you also have wide receivers. Like you said, there are no good names. Like, you don't have a Marvin, a Marvin Mims that you know you're going to be able to get a bunch from him and he's going to be able to take someone deep. A team like Kansas, who has a very strong secondary coming back, that can handle, you know, whatever deep threat they try to throw, unless it's a guy who really breaks out early in the year, that makes it a lot harder, right? When you're relying on that running game, but you don't have a passing game to kind of take that pressure off. It happened to Kansas a lot in the last, you know, decade and a half, is that they really had a running game that was very strong. They had really good running backs, but everybody could key in on them. And so I do worry about that if I'm, you know, if I'm an Oklahoma fan of, do we have enough? Can we take enough pressure off that a team like Kansas doesn't, you know, stack 8 or 9 in the box and come after your running backs and, you know, cause some problems there? Now, granted, I think Oklahoma has the guys that they can shuffle in and out to try to figure out some of those issues, especially, you know, on the field as they go. The real question, though, of course, becomes, you know, I don't know, like you said, I don't know that Dillon Gabriel does enough to elevate everybody else to get that offense back to where they need to be. So I think he's probably the biggest question mark for me is, are you going to get the kind of play from Dillon Gabriel that you need to improve all the other parts of the offense? And I just don't know that he can do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at OU from this, the efficiency statistics, OU was a top 10 on first and second down, and then I believe a top 110 on third and fourth. Yeah, I mean, they were just a completely different football team in the money down, so to speak, when things had to happen on those free downs, for a lack of a better term, where you had a little more space or something. OU was able to operate, but when things had to be very precise, you had to move somebody to pick up the 3rd and 3 or something like that, OU really struggled with. And OU, and maybe that's potentially schematically, that's just like a side effect of the scheme, of the idea of like, hey, we want to try to score from 70 yards out. Because what happens when you're on, you know, the 15 or the 10 and you're trying to score? Everything gets really small. You know, you're in a phone booth. Like, that doesn't quite drive as well.
Even if you're
situational
like
football,
even if you're like a 3rd and 1 from your own 42-yard line, like you're trying to pick up that first down, you're not going for the huge chunk plays. And some teams like Texas Tech will go for it anyway because they're going to go for it on 4th down. But you know, if you change the goal, if you're trying to stretch stuff out and make space so that you can take advantage of those spaces, then you have to condense it to try to get a very short gain, whether it's because there's not much room left on the field or because you just need that first down, it completely changes the way that you play. And I think there are a lot of teams that struggle with that. And I'm not surprised that a defensive coach like Brent Venables is, you know, potentially doesn't have the system set up in his first year, right, as a head coach to be able to switch like that. So I think there's as much room to talk about the growth of the coaching staff scheme-wise this year as there is for the growth of the offense. I do want to switch over to the defensive side, but before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. I am here with Peyton Guthrie of the Keyhole Pod talking about the Oklahoma Sooners. Already talked about the offense and kind of the questions there. Obviously, with Brent Venables being a defensive guy and the defense being at least somewhat decent last year, how do you expect that unit to step up, and what do you expect to kind of be the big storylines there?
Well, if you were paying attention to the transfer portal, OU took in a lot of big people. And that was just a big issue OU had last year. In the 7 losses, they gave up 250 yards on the ground. In the wins, they gave up, I think, around 125. So, I mean, there's just a difference there when you're giving up double the amount of rushing yards from winning losses. Oddly enough, I believe the passing yards were pretty much the same across the board, which maybe it means the secondary was just bad consistently, or the offense or defense line wasn't allowing, wasn't getting pressure on the quarterback. Once OU got out of non-conference play, Grimes and Downs basically disappeared. Those are your two starting ends last year. It looks like Grimes and Downs will not be your starters more than likely coming into the season. So that tells you immediately when Brent Venables, again, at the Big 12 Media Days was talking about competitive depth, that now you've got guys who were starters last year who are now on the two deep. You know, it shows you like the team is progressing. It is becoming a more robust roster, especially on the defensive line. And you're also 2 years removed from an Alex Grinch system, where everyone was like 275, 280. And now if you look across the board, all your inside guys are 300 plus. I mean, that's just helpful. I mean, you know, being big isn't like the end all be all, but sometimes when you're not as easy to move, that's helpful. You're not getting pushed at the point of attack.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Rondell Bothroyd
coming in from weight.
Undersized defenders are not very, are not nearly as effective. Kansas fans are well aware.
And then on the on the end, you have a transfer, Rondell Bothroyd coming in from Wake. You have Trace Ford coming in from Oklahoma State. Trace will probably only play on obvious passing downs. He has health injury. He has health issues himself throughout his history. But if he can stay healthy and OU can use him as like a package player, that's a great third and long guy to trot out there and say, your job is to bend the edge and get to the quarterback. That's something he can do. Then Bothroyd, he'll be out there the entire time. He was a great player for where he was before coming into Oklahoma now. Hopefully be able to continue that career trajectory. They also have PJ Adebare, who's a five-star freshman who does not look like a freshman. I project him to play some. As OU's like rotating this stuff through rotational defensive line. Because as we've seen in the Big 12, it's not quite the same hyper speed as it used to be. You know, defenses do have times to kind of roll in and kind of stay fresh. And OU now has the chance to stay fresh now. If you look at some defensive snap counts last year, OU had, Danny Stutzman and I think the other, maybe Deshaun White, I believe, were number one and number three in snaps played in all of college football. Like, they did not have anyone else to play at those positions. And now they do. And that's just going to be helpful there. So OU being able to rush the passer organically and being able to stand up in the middle of the defensive line, I believe you're going to see that happen. Maybe it won't happen the same way as like the early Bob Stoops teams or something like that, or where you're like, oh, these guys are all first round draft picks. Like, this sucks to play against them. It won't be at that level, but I think they're going to be much more, they're going to be closer to an average, above average defensive line when before they were a below average offensive defensive line, last year. And if anyone's listening to this and you're related to an OU defensive player who played last year, I'm sorry. That's just the facts of the situation. The thing that will be interesting for OU and OU fans, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, it's where they play the defensive line schemes. Are they playing that four down front or three down front? Now, OU fans across the board seem to hate the three down front, even though it seems to be where they got most of their success. But it's just the idea of less beef on the field. But they also just didn't have defensive ends who could play. But now they do seem to have some guys who can play that defensive ends. And also, I think they can handle that 3-3 a little bit better. Because, like I said, all those guys now that nose tackle defensive ends as they shade to the inside, maybe play like a tight package as everyone's shading into the inside, a 3-eye, I believe, position, they're all 300-plus. Like, they're all just bigger. You can fill the gaps and allow people to move behind you, move through the rest of those gaps a little more effectively to kind of push through. That is where it all is going to end and be for Oklahoma next year. Does the defensive line stand up? Nothing else matters at any one point in time. If you're not seeing OU get pressure on quarterback organically without Brent Venables having to scheme up a five-man pressure or a six-man pressure, it does not matter anything else that's going forward. The linebackers are headed up by Stutzman again. And then it's kind of like who's next to him. Like everything seems that Danny Stutzman has made the leap. You know, last year, you know, Brent Venables was saying, like, Danny Stutzman didn't even have a playbook. And now this year he's breaking down the team and he's running the defensive practices and defensive drills. So it's a major leap in maturity level, which when you're coming to that linebacking position, sometimes that's all it is. It's the maturity to know where things are happening, watching tape, you know, making sure all that stuff, making sure the guy next to you is lined up where he needs to be. Because defense, you have to play everyone on a string. You know, it's everyone needs to know where you're all, where you're moving. But the next thing comes, who's sitting next to Stutzman? Is it Kanick? Is it Kip Lewis? Is it Kobe McKenzie? Brent Venables really, really, really loves to talk about Connor Neer, a transfer from a D2 school, I believe, which scares me, but maybe he's got a really strong head on his shoulders about how defensive structure should play. But that position there, Danny Stutzman, and then game one against Arkansas State, we'll kind of see for sure who's going to be next to him. I'll toss it into the linebacking position, the cheetah position that Brent Venables calls it. So if you guys aren't familiar with the cheetah position, it's basically a combination of defensive end, like a stand-up rush defensive end, Sam linebacker, and strong safety all combined into one player. The most famous example at Clemson was the Isaiah Simmons, who played at 6'4", 240, I believe, and could run a 4.4. McCullough is similarly built. Maybe he's not running a straight sub 4.4, but he's also, like, I believe, laser timed at 4.5-ish, 4.4 or something. So he's quick, can move. But he hasn't been asked to cover in his college career. He's going to play more like a true Sam linebacker, positioning from a stand-up edge to allow OU to give you a four-man front, even when they only have three down linemen, or a five-man front when they're playing a 4-2-5, positioning that that roamer, that star player, as a cheetah position if they want to do that. And again, I'm sorry, my dogs must have heard the wind or something.
They're one of the least intrusive dogs I've had on the podcast.
Fantastic. So Deshaun could allow OU to have a little more organic star power when it comes to rushing the quarterback, because that's what he did really well at Indiana. But in that cheetah position, that can allow him to drop into zones or to maybe pick up a tight end. I do not want to see him chasing tight ends down the seam. I do not believe that is his strength at his size and, you know, quick burst ability. I would rather him be closer to the line and allowing OU to bring more pressure. And then the secondary, I'm honestly have zero issues secondary. I may be the only OU fan's going to tell you this. OU has Gentry Williams, who's a star recruit, who's second year in the program. They got Woody Washington, who is their best cornerback. They have Billy Bowman, who's their best secondary player, fully healthy. They have Reggie Pearson, transfer from Tech, who's basically a headhunter back there. And they're going to be able to cover people, and they're going to be able to hit people. I'm totally fine with this secondary. You can clip this once they give up 50,000 touchdown passes. But as I am right now, the starting line of the secondary, I believe in 100% completely. And then you have guys like Peyton Bowen and Key Lawrence. Now, Peyton Bowen's a five-star recruit who had committed to Oregon, didn't send in his paperwork, then recanted and committed to Oklahoma like 2 days later. So he was able to get a five-star safety. The same school that Arnold went to, so it's good there. Denton Geyer, and then Key Lawrence is a veteran of that position himself. They're set and ready to go on the defensive secondary. That's going to be, I believe, will be something that people will be a little confused about, because OU has been known for giving up big bust plays and guys running free down the sideline. I do not see that happening this year. Now, if a quarterback has 5 to 7 seconds to throw the football, sure.
Right, right. But if any quarterback has that long, you're right. Now, okay.
Exactly.
So I mean, looking at this, because I think you talked a lot about, you know, being strong up the middle. Kansas plays a completely, I think, different style from that. Like, they play a lot on the edges. They do a lot of, like, rolling out of quarterbacks. They do a lot of misdirection. They do a lot of different things that could potentially cause some issues. And I know that, like, last year, you know, Jason Bean being the starter last year, you know, yes, they played, I thought, fairly well in the first half and then got closer in the second half. Obviously couldn't stop Oklahoma from scoring at all. But, I mean, I look at that game and it seems like that game was a lot closer than a lot of people want to think that it was, because you look at a 10-point final margin, and yes, Kansas scored late to bring it back. But you look at what Kansas had to deal with guys being gone and their best cornerback getting injured early in the – or late in the first half, and, like, all of the kind of things around there. And then what Kansas did to Oklahoma in Lawrence 2 years ago. Like, how much worry is there about the way that Kansas specifically matches up with this Oklahoma team with some of the unique things that they can do?
Now, you do mention that the offensive like difference there. Spread offenses are mainly going to be running out of the run game because of just how the running back is aligned with the quarterback. Most of the spread run game is through that A gap. They're trying to immediately get into the center. It just takes too long for them to get to the edge. And so if you see a lot of like anti-spread defenses, so to speak, let's look at Iowa State and what they do with the with their inverted Tampa 2 type of situation. They give you a soft edge. Like they're putting stuff in the middle. It's where that tight defensive lineman formation comes from. Iowa State, now LSU uses it. Basically everyone still stole it now. They basically block the middle of the line and say, run to the edge. We do not care because we know you don't do it. You know, it's like a spread offenses just don't run to the edge. Right. That's why a lot of spread offenses, and if you watch OU, they're doing a lot of like, you know, Drake Stoops is taking a reverse, or there's a jet sweep, because that's how you get to the edge in this type of, in a bear raid offense. Kansas has like basically a perfect counterpunch out on the offense for most anti-spread defenses, because like you said, they want to get to the edge. Their entire offense is built around, we don't have the big, giant, huge dudes up front who can just push you around. So just run around them. And it's great for Lance to have scheme that way because, I mean, no disrespect in any way, shape, or form for the Kansas football team. It's not recruiting at a level in which you can say, we got the Jimmy and Joes. We're just going to run through like, a dude. You know, it's just not how it is.
Right. They're not pulling five-star offensive linemen. Like,
no.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea of like, hey, we're going to run to where you're not, that's fantastic. And to do that within an option thing. So, one, you're stressing the defense by running to where they're not or where they're allowing you to run. But then having them – then like creating force players where they have to make a decision, that it's just great football. And seeing some of these teams play Kansas early last year – and I'm going to be honest with you. I picked Kansas to win six games last year. So, I feel very happy about that.
Me too.
I was like, let's go. Let's do it. Is I was just kind of clicking through. I was like, I like Lance. I think he can do it. And it was very – and once they won two or three, I was like, yeah, they're going. They're going all the way. They're doing this. And I think in our show, I actually have them going 7-5, you know, just based on schedule and stuff. I think it's going to be good. If the defense can come from like the 90s to like the 70s, you're winning ball games. Because the offense, you're going to have the best quarterback and the best running back in the conference. How much does that matter? We'll find out if they both stay healthy. But how OU handles that I will say this. The names of Sean McCullough, Billy Bowman, and Reggie Pearson, their jobs are going to be coming down the alley and trying to murder a running back. If they do it enough times, it's going to help out OU football as they play this Kansas game. Or if the edges are able to get really good containment on Daniels, that will be helpful. That said, Daniels you have to play contain against him. You really can't rush hardcore at him because he's going to break containment, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, damn, they went 20 yards very quickly. You have to turn him into a straight passer. But he's good. I mean, he's, in my opinion, hands down.
Well, and then
listen to national media about the Texas quarterback.
Oh, gosh.
You have the best quarterback.
I mean, add in the Jason Bean factor, right? Like, this year they've already talked about having a lot more dual quarterback looks. You know, if you have the option where you run that reverse and it's Jason Bean running the reverse and he can pull up and throw, like, that adds so many different wrinkles. So I will be extremely excited to see what Andy Kotelnicki does. And I think that is kind of the unknown for this particular game, right, coming up against Oklahoma, is are they able to shut down the edge considering they are so geared towards shutting down the inside. Kansas, it has that counterpunch where they do things – a lot differently than a lot of other teams do because they have the ability to do it with all the different guys that they have. So coming into, I would normally go through the entire schedule, but honestly, like looking at a lot of these teams, there's way too many teams that we just don't really know what we're going to get from them. And so like I wouldn't be shocked if you said that Oklahoma's going to struggle and go 7-5 this year. Or if you said, I mean, yeah, the only real for sure challenge they have is, you know, against Texas. Like, I wouldn't be shocked by either of those just because we don't know enough, I think, about Oklahoma. We don't know enough about a lot of the teams that they're playing this year. So, I mean, do you want to throw out what you think is going to happen for this Oklahoma team in terms of how many games they're going to win, how many games they're
we have public predictions out there for the full Big 12. Like I said, I have a – I believe I'm going to pull up on our Instagram at Keyhole Pod or Keyhole Sports on Instagram. Right. Let me do that right now. So I've got Kansas 7-5. I actually have the wins and losses, but I don't have them on a computer right now. Now, this – I do host an OU Homer podcast.
Oh, of course.
So we're looking at the rosy disposition of life.
Oh, of course. Of course.
I think OU has the ability – I have publicly said OU is going 11-1. That means everything good happens for OU. That means everything breaks their way. If you were to look at their schedule, if I were to take this Oklahoma Sooners hat off,
okay,
OU's going 9-3. There's two losses immediately in my mind. You look at Texas, you look at TCU, who I think TCU is going to be better than what is expected of them to be. And then they probably trip up at Provo at that. That's a travel game to Utah at that point in time. Potentially will be a late kickoff. But I'm putting the hat back on, Oklahoma Sooner hat back on. They go 11-1, they lose to Texas, and then they end up playing Texas Tech in the Big 12 championship.
Because
Texas Tech is going to go 10-2, and it will tie Texas, but we'll have a head-to-head victory over Texas, giving us a 2008 tiebreaker situation all over again. And Texas Tech and Oklahoma will close out your current rendition of the Big 12 before Texas and OU move on to the SEC.
See, but I'm surprised.
Kansas
I'm surprised.
7-5.
I was to say, I'm surprised that you didn't throw the podcast audience here a bone and say they'll go 11-1, lose to Kansas, and then demolish Texas in the Big 12 championship. So, I mean, I think though. To be honest, this is one of those games that I have circled as probably a loss for Kansas, but a really good chance for them to get the upset because it's going to be in Lawrence. Yeah. You're going to have, barring, of course, any huge injury issues one way or another for either team, you're going to have a Kansas team that matches up. And, especially after what they did 2 years ago. Like, if the defense is the defense has the capability right now to play the way that they did 2 years ago and cause Oklahoma some problems – especially if they have not, ironed out their issues wide receiver wise. And so I do think that Oklahoma is probably going to take a kind of out of nowhere, what the heck is going on right now, loss, just because I think every Big 12 team is going to take one of those, honestly.
And it's OU tradition.
Yeah. But I mean, I think every team in this Big 12 is going to take a loss that's what the heck just happened, because that makes absolutely no sense. With the exception of, Cincinnati if they lose all of them, because I think that potentially makes sense, but throw those Cincinnati.
The only team I have really, really, really bothering me now is West Virginia. I have them going 1-11. I do not think Neil Brown makes it through the non-con. They play Penn State and Pitt, I believe. I think he wins the one FCS team they play, then loses horribly to those teams, and they say, okay, we have to pull the trigger. I think that's what happens for that team. It just kind of folds up shop from that point in time. But if you're a Kansas fan, and you're trying to keep track of Oklahoma potentially, or trying to keep track of some other Big 12 teams, that you need to watch what happens OU SMU and OU Cincinnati. If OU is winning that SMU game 55-48 or something like that, and then they kind of get pushed around a little bit by Cincinnati, then you maybe start thinking, hey, this game in Lawrence is probably closer to a 50-50 than 60-40, 70-30 than what we're thinking about. Those are two, I think, very well games that you can kind of test the mettle of Oklahoma very quickly. If the only time you watch Oklahoma is the Texas game, don't bother. These are two giant teams. Red River's always weird. Texas should be the most talented team. It is the most talented team in the Big 12 with the Bulldogs.
That hasn't really meant much for them the last few years.
That's true. They should win the Big 12. They should go to Tuscaloosa and potentially beat Alabama. And this should be a world-beating team. Who knows what will happen? Sark's never won 10 games. Their quarterback is actively bad sometimes. He's point-shaving at times.
Yeah,
so who knows
what's
going
to happen.
I don't
think Quinn Ewers is as good as a lot of people seem to think he is. So
No.
I'm curious how long it takes them to go to Archie Manning. So,
yeah, to me, it's how long did it take for them to go to Malik?
I don't think
Manning's
going to
play
Manning
at all
this
year.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, they're going to have to. But I think that's kind of where it is. that's me being as rosy as an OU fan as I possibly can. If I'm being very, very negative, I think OU has a lot of like 65% wins on the schedule, and Kansas being one of those. And I'm just saying they win those games due to the depth of talent they've been able to acquire on offensive line and defensive line via the portal. Now, if one or two dudes get hurt, all of a sudden it's bets off Jackson Arnold starting because the season's gone, you know, something along the line at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, and which I is think on everybody.
But at a University of Oklahoma.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that everybody is kind of just a injury or two away.
Oklahoma as a football program.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Awesome,
for those
man.
That want to get more of your work, kind of see what your thoughts are on the entire Big 12. Where's the best place to do that?
Best place, probably just on Twitter at Keyhole Sports. From there, we post all of our stuff. Our podcast is through the Keyhole. It's on every major podcast outlet. So if you listen to Spotify or anything, it's on there. If for some reason you're some weird sicko OU fans in secret, patreon.com/throughthekeyhole. We have multiple tiers where you can keep up with us. We try to be funny guys. We try to cover college football from a different perspective. You know, we're not like stalking 17-year-olds and figuring out where they're going to commit to.
Yeah.
We just try to look at it and, you know, just give our input. So we appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Andy.
Yeah, it was great.
Anytime, you're always welcome to come on our side.
Awesome. Well, that is going to do it for us today. Peyton, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, or it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast so you can subscribe. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys to get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are part of the 1012 Podcast Network over on the Sports Social Podcast Network, the premier European, sports podcast network there. They have been expanding here into the U.S., and we are really happy to be part of it. You can find all the great shows, though, on the 1012 Network that covers all the teams in the Big 12 Conference by going to 1012network.com. Once again, Peyton, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.